Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood will come to order. Hi, Nikki. Welcome. So we are, I'm going to mention a couple of things that we are going to carry over. Thank you. We are going to carry over Senate Bill 760 to the next meeting. We are going to carry over Senate Bill 632 until the next hearing. And with that, I'm going to open up a public, yeah, but we're going to talk about it before I carry that over. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 902.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 902 reinstates the required contents of community health improvement plans developed by coordinated care organizations. It just sunset with the convening of the 2015 legislative session. It declares emergency effective on passage.
Great, thank you. And we've got Doug Riggs, Maureen Hinman, Ashla Strong, and Laura Etherton. Can you all come up together? Welcome. It's the other one that you want to speak on, right? Senator Lance Anderson, the next one, 951. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Okay, I'm going to start. Hi, my name's Maureen Hinman, and I represent the Oregon School-Based Health Alliance, the membership organization for school-based health centers around the state. And we believe that school-based health care keeps kids healthy, learning, and thriving. And that's why I'm testifying in support of SB 902. The focus of this bill is to bring together health care and education reform efforts so that kids and families are getting the best education and health services in ways that make sense and are not complicated. Health status and educational attainment are inextricably linked, and it makes sense to coordinate the work of the organizations that are striving to improve both. Kids need to be healthy to learn, to be successful in life, and grow into healthy adults. And healthy, educated kids will make communities healthier and more vibrant in the long run. This bill removes the sunset from the previous legislation that passed in 2013, which was SB 436, and it provides a foot in the door for some of the smaller programs like school-based health centers that may have a hard time getting a seat at the table of a larger entity like a CCO that has many priorities. It encourages an exploration of how resources at a community level can be maximized to create efficient delivery of services that will better reach families. And the Oregon Health Authority report on Senate Bill 436 reveals that the previous bill had an impact, and CCOs have indeed begun collaborating with children's programs, but there's still work to be done, especially with programs that focus on youth. So your support of this bill will help ensure that this important work will continue and expand. Thanks.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs, and I have a PowerPoint, so if we could turn the screen on.
And while that's being turned on, I would like to compliment you on your pin.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Coordination is very important.
So my family connections to Oregon State go back to 1867 when Corvallis College was being run by my great-great-grandparents, among others. And I'm a Beaver and a season ticket holder. And for the second year in a row, I woke up this morning and forgot to put on my orange tie and my black suit. So all I can do is a pin. So 2 years in a row, I've forgotten Beaver Day, which is very bad. So I'm sure that my grandparents are rolling over in their grave.
You're a legacy, and they still graduated.
It's hard to believe. Yeah. So I really appreciate you having us here today. We are correcting an oversight that was made. The last amendment that came out on Senate Bill 436, the last day of the Senate Health Committee last year, ran through very quickly, and I failed to note that at the very end of that last amendment, they had stuck a sunset clause on Senate Bill 436. The point of Senate Bill 436 was to ask CCOs, as they move towards their next round of community health improvement plans and transformation plans, to bring children's providers and children's programs to the table. It's not mandatory, it's a voluntary program, but the sunset was inexplicable because CCOs aren't redoing their S-CHIPs or their transformation plans until a year or two or 3 years down the road. So we are here to correct that oversight. I do want to make a few points because an awful lot has happened since last session. As you know, a few years ago, we decided to pursue at the state level a bifurcation of youth programs at the state. 0 to 6 was going to be handled by early learning hubs, and program 6 to 21 were going to be handled partially by the Youth Development Commission and partially by other groups at various places. And that's really one of the problems that this bill seeks to correct. If you look at what's happening with programs for youth, and we talk about school-age youth, ages 6 to 18, 6 to 21. They are facing many challenges and kind of a bifurcated stovepipe system with 7 or more state agencies dealing with programs that affect kids with high ACEs scores, 36 counties, 16 CCOs, school districts, law enforcement, mental health challenges, family issues, et cetera. So it's very hard for the programs that work with these kids to get a grip on what's going on a statewide basis. As we know very clearly from looking at the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study in the last few years, these are the kids who have suffered childhood trauma, have a high an ACE score of 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, and they're the kids who are really going to be a challenge to deal with as time goes by. Kids are resilient, but they need to have services available to them. I won't dwell on this chart, but it really talks about the fact that the larger number of ACE scores you have, it leads into a lifetime of disrupted neurodevelopment, emotional cognitive impairment, health risk behaviors, disease, social ills, imprisonment, you know, problems with the workforce, corrections issues, et cetera. So the earlier we can get to a process of intervening with these kids in a comprehensive, coordinated manner, the better off we'll be down the road and the more money we'll save. So that's basically the ACEs system. What we've been looking at, and we meaning the School-Based Healthcare Network, the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, Care Oregon, and a variety of other people, have been trying to come up with, get our arms around the variety of programs that impact kids who have high ACEs scores. And these include kids that are touched by DHS programs, by Oregon Health Authority programs, obviously through the educational system, through OYA and justice programs, through housing and workforce issues, and I'm probably leaving, you know, several of them off the list here. At the center of this whole nexus of programs are kids. And currently, the problem is that there is no one group in a community or at the statewide level responsible for trying to deal with the kids. The Youth Development Council, which is a great group of folks, is a very small entity with a handful of staff people. Their budget has been reduced from a few years ago dramatically. They don't have the capacity to be able to do it. And so we're all of those of us working on kids programs are trying to get a grip around, you know, who can help coordinate these programs. So, and you can take a look at, you know, some of the state goals that are impacted by a failure to be able to address these kids' needs, and that's the 40-40-20 goals for education, triple aim at the healthcare level, workforce goals, reducing the number of people in corrections, reducing abuse rates, child abuse rates, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a number of obstacles, lack of supports, the stovepipe programs, chronic absenteeism that we're running into, and lack of funding for the programs. So these are obstacles and things that we need to overcome. So how does that all, that long diatribe that I just gave you, kind of fit in with this bill? Senate Bill 902 certainly isn't a panacea. It will not single-handedly solve the problem, but we really believe that CCOs are an integral part of addressing health care needs, mental health care needs, A&E needs, of coordinating and integrating various services in their districts, in their regions. Many of them are already moving along the path of trying to integrate children's programs. We applaud that. And this bill simply encourages that process, helps keep the process going. It's not the end of the road by any means, and we have a group that has been meeting, held 2 conferences last year. Several of you attended the conferences in January and November. We have latched on to the issue of chronic absenteeism as being an indicator of the difficulties that these kids are facing. And so over the next several months, we're going to be trying to figure out how do we build a better system of supports for those kids and for their families and their communities. We had a group of school-based healthcare groups here in February, mm-hmm. and I was at one of the meetings with one of the legislators, and we had two kids who were in foster care. One girl was telling us that she'd been in 39 foster homes in her life, 39. And that's not unusual. Kids have gone through a variety of foster care homes. And she indicated that the very first time that anyone tried integrating her mental health care needs and her physical health care needs together was when she came into a school-based health center in her district. And the school-based health center connected her with Medicaid and with her CCO. I think that's a really powerful story of the impact that we can have on a teenage kid who came into high school as a freshman, having never had mental health services, got connected with her community through her CCO, and 2 years later is applying for college. And it's a win-win situation. So what we're trying to do here with Senate Bill 902 is encourage the existing process, work with our CCOs, try to bring education advocates, healthcare advocates, human services, school-based health centers, and CCOs to the table, along with other groups in the community, nonprofits, et cetera, to try to put together a comprehensive plan for these kids. So it's a long explanation of a simple bill, but we think it'll make a difference in the long run.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? No? Thank you both very much. Are the other two folks here, Ashla Strong and Laura Etherton? Seeing none, is there anybody else that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 902? Seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 902. Colleagues, we can move this today. We've got the materials, or we can bring it back. It's the first day we've heard it. If you're comfortable, I'm comfortable moving forward. Is that okay with everyone? All right, then I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 902. Senator Olson.
Somewhere in this part of heaven, right?
You should. It's somewhere in there. It's going to be hidden.
Heck with it. Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Vice Chair Olson, would you like to carry this one?
Sure, be glad to.
All right, is that okay? I assume you want to carry the next one. Yes?
And Senator Cruz is excused.
And Senator Cruz is excused. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 902 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 951.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 951 modifies the charge, size, composition, and duties of the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission. Makes composition discretionary, moves ex officio members, that is, folks who by virtue of their office are statutorily on this commission. Permits the commission to appoint non-members to subcommittees, removes for the requirement for functions of budget advisory committee, requires the commission to make specific recommendations as part of its long-term strategic plan. This has no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal, and no subsequent referral.
Thank you, Senator Montes-Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes-Anderson. I represent Gresham, Trout, Delwood Village, Fairview, and parts of East Portland. And I actually use one of my priority bills for Senate Bill 951. I have been a member of the Governor's Task Force on Drug and Alcohol Prevention for many, many, many years, even before it was even called this. And we have really had a problem with quorum issues, and we haven't been able to really do anything. And so the governor's office actually brought this forward and said, hey, we need to change how the commission is structured. So that's basically what the bill does, and I hope that we can pass it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Jonathan Eames and Daniel Ward, please.
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, and Senators, I'm Daniel Ward. I'm the Executive Director of the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 951. The proposed legislation accomplishes two things which have been, in my mind, impediments to the functioning of the commission. The first item is that it reduces the membership of the commission. The commission membership has been 28 people, of which 25 carry a vote, meaning that in order to hold a meeting, a quorum of 13 had to be met. Consequently, over the course of the commission's life since 2009, meetings have been held with quorum only very rarely. The second item that this addresses is the scope and breadth of the commission's charge. I don't know if you've had opportunity to read ORS 430.241 and .242. Those are the statutes that were created by the legislature in 2009 to structure the commission. The charge is so broad and so complex, it takes 6 pages. And what this proposed bill does at this point is streamlines that, giving the commission a more concise and clear focus on building efficiencies and building effectiveness across the state in concert with the Oregon Health Authority and the other state agencies that provide drug treatment and drug prevention services. Both of these changes, in my opinion, are valuable. I support this bill, and I thank Senator Manas Anderson and Representative Greenlick for bringing it forward. I hope that you'll support it too. Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association, otherwise known as OPRA, the statewide association representing alkaline drug treatment providers and prevention providers in this state. So this is difficult testimony for me to deliver because most of the time I try to keep my personal comments out of what we do here. When this bill was originally crafted, when this Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission was originally set forth, I don't know how many folks remember what happened, but it was the Attorney General Kroger who actually brought the bill forward originally. And his intent, and the intent of those who worked on this bill, was to create a commission. And I remember, actually, right near the end of this bill's passage, we got a email from Legislative Fiscal Office that went to the co-chairs that said, do you guys know what you're doing? Because you're actually creating something that has a lot of power far and above what a commission is supposed to have and other commissions that we have in the state. And the response was, absolutely. That's exactly what the intent of this legislation was to create a commission that not only had the membership of folks from the community and stakeholders, but also had the membership of every state agency director, the governor's office, on this commission, legislators on this commission, so that we could actually make significant forward progress in looking at this issue in its cross-cutting nature across all state agencies and all state government. And it was a powerful commission. It had the opportunity or the ability to look at budgets and assign priorities within that budget, in those budgets across state agencies, and make recommendations to the legislature as far as budgets, how we track and treat and really look at the issue of alcohol and drug substance abuse prevention. And what I'm here to say today is that I'm very much saddened by what we have to do today. Functionally, I get it. We weren't able to get a quorum. We weren't able to get people there. But that in itself is kind of a sad situation, in that we create a commission and we create a something that has a lot of power because people understood the importance of this issue and addressing this issue across all state agencies. But what we do, what we're doing now is basically saying we failed. We failed in our ability to take a leadership role, and I'm not assigning any blame to individuals. But this legislative session and in previous legislative sessions, and I know many of you have worked on this issue, we continue to fail to address this issue in a robust manner, both policy-wise and budget-wise. We still see treatment severely underfunded and prevention severely underfunded. And I'm not using this necessarily as a forum to talk about all the other things that are going on this legislative session, but I think it's indicative of what we have failed to do as a state, as a legislature, as an executive, all branches of government, that we have to come to this point where I get it. You know, we have to make a committee that can actually meet. Totally understand that. So I'm not opposing the changes, or we're not opposing the changes that are suggested in this bill. But what I am very concerned and saddened by is that we've come to this point that we have to do this to be able to get a meeting together. I look at other entities and other commissions that we have, the Oregon Health Policy Board. We don't struggle with people getting to the Oregon Health Policy Board. I look at other ones where we assign a lot of state agency directors. We don't have problems with getting people there, or quorum issues, so that we have to change the entire statute to be able to get people there. So, yes, functionally we have to do this. I get that, and this is by no means a reflection on Representative Bielik or Senator Ramona Sanderson's attempt to make a more functional committee, but really it does sadden me. And I wish that we could take this issue of addiction and give it its due. As far as leaders, we have to do that at the state if we're ever going to tackle this issue, and time again, historically, we haven't been able to do that. So I know it's a kind of a downer of a testimony that I'm delivering today, but really I'm hoping that this is a call to this legislature and to the various branches of government to actually step up and do something meaningful that will change how we address addiction treatment, substance abuse, treatment, recovery, and prevention in the state.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think comments are incredibly important. If you look at the impact of substance abuse on any of the issues that we talk about in this building, from absenteeism from school to crime to foster care, child abuse and neglect, if we don't get our arms around meaningful drug and alcohol treatment, prioritize talking about it first and then funding it in ways that are effective and useful, it's going to be very difficult to really make progress on any of the other issues that we wrestle with on a regular basis. Senator Mona Sanderson?
I think part of the problem is we had a lot of change in leadership. We lost Kroger, the Attorney General. We lost Williams, who was corrections. And we lost Goldberg from Oregon Health Authority. And with a short number of time, leadership, we had such huge turnover in leadership. And we sort of have to build up again and get our leadership that exists now on board. And hopefully we're going to be able to make significant changes. Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony.
Great. Thank you both very much. Is there anybody else that would like to be heard on this bill? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 951. Good timing, Senator Cruz. Does anyone have issues with moving this one forward today into work session?
Oh, I got a headache.
You have a headache? I've got some Aleve upstairs.
No, I think.
And then we've got a nurse, so she could she could administer the Aleve.
She had cocktails in the last meeting.
She had what?
We sit right here next to each other. She had cocktails in her.
Cocktails.
That's why she's comfortable today.
Okay, so we've taken a little bit of a detour here. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 951. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 951 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 951 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
But I would like to commend the Senator Ramona Sanderson for putting this together to make this thing work.
And I hope, Senator, you can reflect in your carry on the floor some of the concerns that Jonathan
absolutely
raised. I think it's really, really important to keep that as part of the record. Is there any objection to Senate Bill 951 moving to the floor with due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Ramona Sanderson, will you carry the bill?
Thank you. I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much. All right. So I just realized that Representative Stark has been sitting here for a long time, and I think he left. Although, is that Representative Stark in the back?
I think so.
leaning back? Oh, that's Jonathan. Oh, you had a similar tie. Okay. He's on the phone. We'll do another one, and then when he gets off the phone, we'll do this. They're trifocal, so I can't see very well, depending on. So we're going to open up. Oh, there he is. Excellent timing. Representative Stark. So now that Representative Stark is here, does anybody want to guess what we're going to open next? Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 741. Colleagues, Senate Bill 741 is not actually ready to go today. DHS and the proponents have been working on some amendments, which we just got back today, so we don't have the fiscals. And I think we're going to have DHS and Angie, no, Mark, come on up and tell us where things are going. And did you want to say anything, Representative Stark, or are you just making sure we keep the crane? All right. You're welcome to come up if you'd like.
Good to watch how the work.
All right.
Or don't, one of the two. So.
Welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark McKechnie. I'm the Executive Director of Youth Rights and Justice. We are the proponents of Senate Bill 741, among others. And I thought I would just briefly remind you what the bill does and then talk about the effect of the amendments. You heard testimony recently on this bill that requires a change in the administrative rules governing adoption preference so that a longtime foster parent and a relative can be considered at the same time and have a greater preference over other folks who may apply for adoption in DHS's adoption selection process. Another section of the bill, Section 7, would require DHS to make a report to the court if a child were removed from a long-time foster home or home designated as a permanent foster home to be moved to another foster home. And then Section 6 gives the court additional authority among other types of placements that the court can order to order placement with a current caretaker, which is the foster home that the child had resided in for 12 months or longer. In discussions with DHS, we agreed on some areas that could be clarified and some areas where the scope could be limited somewhat. And you have the Dash 2 amendments that are the substantive amendments. And those do a couple things. To Section 7, which relates to the court's authority to order placement with a current caretaker, it limits the court's authority to make an order that a child be placed with a current caretaker if DHS has chosen another family to adopt the child, and the appeal rights of the presumably in this case the foster parent who has not chosen to adopt the child had either been exhausted or the timelines had run out. There are administrative appeals that the party that's not chosen can make within the department, and then under the Administrative Procedures Act, there could be an appeal to the court. I think we have a difference of opinion about how often that might occur, but what the amendments make clear is that once the decision is truly final, meaning appeals are either exhausted or completed, the court cannot make an order for a placement that would interfere with the agency's plan to place the child in the chosen adoptive home. The other change that the Dash 2 amendments make is to reduce the instances when DHS is required to report to the court when they move a child from a long-term foster home to another foster home. And that includes when there's a founded allegation of abuse and neglect, or when the department feels that the child's health or safety is at imminent risk and they need to remove the child in order to investigate potential harm to the child. When the move is at the request of the foster parent, makes sense. And also, again, when the appeals process, if someone, presumably the long-term foster parent, had applied to be the adoptive parent for the child, was not chosen, and their appeals had either been exhausted or the timelines had run out, and the department makes the move after that point, they're not any longer required to report to the court. So those are the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 3 amendments, I think, reflect what I perceived as the strong sentiment of the committee after hearing the testimony that we should move up the effective date of at least the change in the committee process for selecting an adoptive home. So the Dash 3 amendments add an emergency clause which set the effective date or the operative date of Section 5, which requires the change in rules up to September 1st. And we felt that was a good compromise between going into effect immediately upon the governor's signature and waiting until January 1st to give the department time to at least draft and implement a temporary rule. The other sections that I just spoke about, the reporting requirement and the change in the court's authority, would still go into effect January 1st, 2016.
Is this going to protect that little girl? Going to be in time?
Senator Olson, Chair Gelser, I think it was not aimed at a particular case, but it was certainly to reflect a sense of urgency, I think, that was felt among the committee and in the room during the hearing.
Ms. Prouty.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kathy Prouty. I'm the Child Permanency Program Manager for the Department of Human Services, and I just have a couple of very brief comments about the bill. The department, I do want to put on the record that the department continues to be neutral on this bill, and we have worked with YRJ to address our primary concerns about the bill, and we believe that we've been greatly successful in doing so, and we do appreciate YRJ being willing to have discussions with us and make the amendments that make the department feel more comfortable about this bill. The department has one remaining technical concern that's not addressed in the amendments, and that just has to do with the length of time the review process could take, and it may have a consequence of holding children in a placement other than a selected home for a period of time, for an extended period of time. But because we don't know yet how often this provision will be used, the agency will simply be prepared to monitor and track the impact of that particular provision. And those are the only comments that I wanted to make today.
Thank you very much. Senator Cruz.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm fine with this. Mr. McKechnie, I'd like you to take a look for future reference at unfounded allegations, and because they do come into play. And I've always had an issue with the unfounded still being part of the record. And so that's for another day, but something to kind of take a look at.
Duly noted, Senator Cruz.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? We aren't moving this today because we don't have the...
Just a comment. I signed on to the bill very, very much in support of this initially, and then when I read Section 5 and Section 6, I did have real concerns, and so I had the department explained their view, and then I had Youth Rights and Justice explain their view, and I am comfortable in moving the bill, but what I want to make sure is on the record, we want the best interests of the child. We don't want the best interests of the family, and we don't want the best interests of the caretaker. We want what's in the best interests of the child. And so there are some that view that DHS has gone too much in favor of relatives versus caretaker in that sense. I just want us to say, hey, what is in the best interest of the child? I would like to keep, I want to make sure that you are monitoring. I'm glad to hear that you are going to monitor, because we can always make changes in the future. But thank everyone for spending so much time explaining the bill to me.
And then I just want to be extra clear, because we've had a lot of back and forth about this bill. With the amendments that were negotiated today, if we send this bill out of committee and it moves forward, there won't be efforts to further change the bill on the House side. We will have this bill in a place that DHS is comfortable being neutral, that you are comfortable with it, and I'm not going to get a call from the policy chair on the other side saying the understanding was that you were going to do more work on the other side.
Chair Gelser, yes, from our perspective, yes.
The ICWA provision?
I didn't think that was still an issue.
We had a discussion yesterday about making sure that it was clear that for children with whom the Indian Child Welfare Act applies, that the Indian Child Welfare Act does trump any state legislation, and that a judge would not be able to direct a placement for a child that came under the Indian Child Welfare Act. And I thought that there was going to be an additional inclusion of that in the amendment. So I don't know.
So I guess we'll take this offline, because Chris told me before the hearing that there would be no further amendment, that DHS was comfortable with where we were at. And this is kind of how this issue has gone back and forth. So,
Senator Gelser, members of the committee, I apologize. We have a lot of cooks in the kitchen on this bill. It's incredibly technical, and it encompasses a lot of different policy as well. It's our position that federal law, according to the Constitution, would trump state law. And while we had made a request that be clarified in statute, per our discussion that we've had, the agency would be comfortable with this bill moving forward with the amendments that you have before you today.
And can you clarify? So I've heard Ms. Prouty say something different, that the agency would like additional amendments on the House side. I hear you saying we don't need additional. What's DHS's position? Is the bill good to go or not?
The DHS will not be seeking additional amendments on the House side.
Yes, as he said, lots of cooks in the kitchen. The conversations I had with YRJ late yesterday afternoon, I thought there was going to be an additional amendment. Apparently, there's been more conversation today that I wasn't a part of. So,
all right, great, thank you, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest, because dealing with the piece about the tribal folks, I mean that is federal. And if it's, I mean, if we're talking about just that simple clarification, just to make sure that we aren't interceding in places we shouldn't, that sort of technical fix, I don't think would necessarily be a problem if that's all it is.
Correct. So, and I'm not suggesting it's a problem. I just want to get this right before we send it out and not have things unfolded. And I've heard different things about DHS's position from lots of different people. So I just wanted to be really clear on the record.
That would be an easy fix, wouldn't it? Or would it?
Senator Cruz, when you get attorneys involved...
Okay, there is that. Okay. Okay.
I believe that the existing statute that is being changed already has provisions that could potentially be in conflict with federal law, and it's up to the courts to recognize when that conflict might occur and to follow the prevailing law, which is federal law.
Okay. So let's not change it then. But I like where we've landed on this. So, and you can communicate with the chair on the other side to just pass it the way it is and save them a whole lot of work. So. The only other thing.
The goal is to get it right. I mean,
the only other thing I'd like to say is we've been working in this area for a long time. I mean, you know, when we gave Costas standing in court, that was for best interest of the child. So we've done a lot of work in this area already. So.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you all very much. I know this has been very complicated. I know it involves a lot of people and a lot of conversations, and the conversations change. Quickly, if not everybody's in every conversation. So thank you all for sticking with it, for people asking questions openly ahead of time so we can get it done. I know it's been a very, very hard issue, and really appreciate the work of DHS and Chris, your work trying to round everybody up. And Mark and Angie, thank you all very much.
Thank
Okay, so we are going to carry this over to Thursday.
Should we adopt the amendments?
Adopt the amendments and then just wait for the phys res.
Sure,
and,
let's do that. Let's adopt. Are we ready to go on adopting the amendments?
You just need a motion to suspend the rules for purposes of taking vote without the phys res.
No, what?
Well, we're not moving the bill, just the amendments. We're just going to add
just
the amendments.
We're adopting the amendments.
I don't think we need the fiscal and revenue to do this.
I don't know.
We don't.
When did we get the fiscal revenue to move the bill out of committee?
But not to actually
add the amendments. Right. And that makes it clear what we're doing.
Right.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 741, dated 4/14/15.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 741. Is there any, did I say the right one? -2 to 741. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Senator Gilster, I move to adopt the amendment, the -3 amendment to Senate Bill 741, dated 4/14/15.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -3 amendment to Senate Bill 741, dated 4/14/15. Is there any objection?
Easy for you to say.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we're going to carry the bill over to Thursday so that we can get the fiscal and revenue statement so we can move it on. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 741 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 840.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 840 expands the authority and process to exercise custody over mentally ill persons. To include licensed independent practitioners in addition to physicians, defines licensed independent practitioners, declares an emergency effective on passage. This was heard on March 24th. And the -2 amendment has no revenue, a minimal fiscal. The -2 modifies the definition of licensed independent practitioner to reference a certified nurse practitioner authorized to write prescriptions. It requires an initial determination of a person with a mental illness be made by a physician.
So when we last heard this bill, we had a letter from Bob Jundiff, who was out of town, expressing some concerns. We had Patty explain things. We had some different interpretations of the language. Bob and Patty, would you just come up and update us on where we are now, please?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And Chair Gelser, you're exactly right. So we got together, Cindy Sherba from OHSU, acute care unit, and Bob and I got a little phone conference going. We changed the definition to clarify that the second person that is a licensed independent practitioner is a nurse practitioner. And Mr. Jundiff was absolutely right. It was very confusing, and he actually indicated I was the only one that made sense. I kind of knew that, but but we clarified it in the definition, and I believe he's here to tell you that we're good to go.
Chair Gelser, excuse me. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Patty O was the only person.
Can you say who you are, Bob?
I'm sorry. I'm Bob Jundiff from Disability Rights Oregon. I'm not only here to butter up Patty O, but to inform the committee that we had some confusing language. The amendments before you clear that language up so that we're broadening out who can initiate civil commitment proceedings. We're adding nurse practitioners who are licensed to prescribe medicine to physicians. We're happy with that change, and we support the bill as it's written, as amended.
Excellent.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you very much. Thanks for working on that. Thanks for sending the letter, Bob. And thanks for making sense, Patty. Oh,
got it.
It's a rare thing, but you got to take it.
Somebody has to do it.
All right. Senator Olson, it's the
-2s?
Yes.
Yep. Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 840, dated 4/9/15.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 840. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 840 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 840 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, it heads to the floor. Senator Bates is the chief sponsor, so I think
so
we should...
So is Senator Mona Sanderson, by the way. So.
No, Bates is. I'm just on the bill.
Okay.
Is that okay with you if he carries
it? Oh, yeah, it's Bates' bill.
Okay. So with that, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 840 and open a work session on Senate Bill 939.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 939 was previously heard on April the 7th. It requires the Department of Corrections to contract with nonprofits to provide programs for incarcerated parents and children. There is no revenue impact. The fiscal statement did issue and a request from, or a recommendation rather, from Legislative Fiscal to add a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. The Dash 2 amendment breaks out the training program for the parent and child in a very specific terms. And then requires DOC to perform an evaluation process with DHS and nonprofits' participation, requires a determination of whether the goals are met, and includes surveys of the incarcerated parents in addition to comparison of outcomes. And it replaces the annual reporting requirement with a biannual reporting requirement. Also requires DHS cooperate with DOC and the nonprofits in accessing DHS services for eligible inmates.
Great. Senator Olson.
Senator Gelser. Or should I say Chair Gelser, which I should say.
Either one works.
I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 939, dated 4-9-15.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 939. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 939 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Ways and Means.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 939 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion, Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, for the record, for the folks in Ways and Means, they should notice that virtually half the senator sponsors of this bill, so it should carry some weight.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and it doesn't need a carrier because it's going to Ways and Means. And I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 939, and then we're going to go back to the front page and open up a work session on Senate Bill 659.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 659 was previously heard on April 7th and then carried over, I believe, on April the 9th. There's a Dash 2 amendment with no revenue and a minimal fiscal. This is the content of the original measure is replaced by the Dash 2 amendment, which is... requires DHS to compile and maintain lists of local service providers for community residents, directs DHS to assist in situations where a child qualifies for home and community-based assistance in their state of residence and is with a parent who resides in Oregon at least 6 weeks of each year by sharing that list of community providers, contacting Medicaid in the child's state of residence, and providing documentation. And there's no subsequent referral.
And colleagues, the Dash 2 amendment does what we asked in the bill in a different way. Right now, Medicaid is portable. If you get sick in one state, it covers you there. What this is getting at is those home and community-based services. So if you have a disabled child that's visiting a non-custodial parent, that they are able to access those support services, and Oregon will bill the appropriate Medicaid plan. And that's why there's a minimal fiscal.
So this doesn't have a fiscal then?
Correct. So it's basically, if your child is coming, you can talk to your community developmental disabilities program, and they will tell you who the providers are, and will connect with that Medicaid program to bill that other state's Medicaid program for the services, because the child is still eligible for the services.
Oh, okay, so the billing is through Medicaid.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Difference in the Dash 1 and the Dash 2?
The Dash 1 only mentioned reciprocal agreements with states that had the K-plan, and only a couple of states have the K-plan. The Dash 2 indicates all home and community-based waivers, which would include the K-plan and just the general home and community-based waiver. And many thanks to the folks at Developmental Disabilities at Seniors and People with Disabilities who really worked to get this language to work the right way.
Now, Madam Chair, if I'm looking at it correctly, this is, we're in 760, not 659. Never mind, I've got the wrong amendment in front of me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Did you move the dash 2 yet?
No. Yeah.
All right. Would you like to do that?
Yes. Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 659 dated 4/10/2015.
Chair Olson moves the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 659. Is there any objection? Oh, wait. Is there any discussion? Then is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 659 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 659 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. It heads to the floor. I'll carry that one. And I'll close.
And just to have it clarified again,
yeah.
So you're saying it's billing Medicaid, so then we get match dollars?
We don't spend any Oregon money because the child is eligible for Medicaid and waiver services in another state, but they're visiting this state.
Oh, that's
so
right.
That other state pays the cost.
Gotcha.
We just pay that role of,
yeah,
play the role of facilitator.
Gotcha. Okay,
right.
Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing or the work session on Senate Bill 659. We've carried over Senate Bill 760, and then we have carried over Senate Bill 632. Do I need to open them and carry them over?
No.
No, okay. And then I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 700.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 700 appropriates general fund dollars to the Oregon Health Authority to assist senior farm direct nutrition program recipients and women, infants, and children farm direct nutrition program recipients for the purchase of fresh local foods. Declares an emergency effective July 1st. It was previously heard. April 2nd has no revenue impact. The fiscal statement as issued. It has a referral to Ways and Means. There is a dash one amendment that puts in the amount $200,000 for the seniors, $100,000 for WIC, $200,000 to the emergency board for the Oregon Health Authority to match federal grant funds, expand programs, or otherwise support the purchase of fresh foods.
Thank you. Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 700 dated 3/25/2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 700. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 700 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 700 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Kind of along the lines of Senator Cruz's prior comments, it would be worthwhile for the Ways and Means Committee to note that a good chunk of the members of the Senate are sponsors of this bill.
Madam Chair, I would point out there are 17 senators who are sponsors of this bill, which I think makes a majority, including the co-chair of Ways and Means. So I should have a good chance, I would think.
It should have a good chance. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, I'm on this bill.
All right. Is there any objection?
No.
Seeing none, so ordered, and Senate Bill 700 moves on its way to Ways and Means. Great, great work, everybody. And I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 700. We have done everything.
What happened to 48?
What do we do with 48?
So 48, we do not need to move that one forward, and we're carrying over 760.
We're not moving 48.
We're not moving 48. And which one?
The three that you didn't have
okay.
Carried over.
And we have done everything we need to do to carry those over so we don't accidentally lose them, right?
760, 632, and 741, that's correct.
All right. Because it would be a shame to accidentally lose 741 at this point after all that work. All right. Thank you all very much, and we're adjourned. At 4 o'clock, everybody.
Wow.
At 4 o'clock, everybody.
Wow.
We're adjourned.